Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-Step Recovery and rumradio.org. Welcome, everybody who's turned in and everyone at home. A lot of these shows are listened to in an archive format. People don't have the time, and they can download it to their MP3 player, listen to it in the car. That's usually a good place to listen to people talking or information, sort of like a university on wheels. I wanted to thank Sober Couch. This is outside the Sober Couch Network. We do a Sober Couch Network on Saturday nights at 9 at Sober Couch. It's on Thursday nights with Joellen and Sarah. They're two sisters out of Minnesota. They have their show. And then there's Oliver, who does the Half Measures Room on the Sober Couch Network. That's on Wednesday nights at 9. Sober Couch is at 10 on Thursday night. Wednesday night at 9 is Half Measures Room, and 9 is Rum Radio Saturday night. I want to thank WNAH out of Nashville, who carries us live Saturday nights. And we'd also like to thank RecoveryToday.net, Recovery Magazine. They've posted some of our articles in there. If Bill was the sale, Dr. Bob was the anchor. They posted that in the hopes that we can get some of the word out on sponsorship and some of the work we do at Rum Radio. I'd like to give you a heads up. We're in Rum Radio is up 98-plus foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're approaching 60,000 hits to the website, and we've received approximately 1,025 notes and letters from around the world thanking us for the work. There is no money being made for the skeptics, and the credit goes to God and the fellowship. We hold to the 11th tradition of anonymity. Although we do not represent AA in any way, shape, or form, or any 12-step recovery program, these are personal opinions, but we take them from program practices and principles. We try to hold to that because they work. Tonight's episode is going to be on meetings in your neck of the woods. When you come to AA, and then the first meeting in your neck of the woods is your first meeting, which is kind of an interesting format since you have no idea what to expect in your first meeting. Meetings are usually, they'll say it's real simple. AA, especially, we keep it simple in the beginning. Don't drink or drug or whatever your flavor of addiction is. You refrain from that. Go to meetings. Meetings are found all over the country. AA probably is most popular because the availability of meetings in various times and various places. But the 12 steps are the 12 steps. The only difference between one 12-step program and another 12-step program is step one. Step one is the only step that mentions the addictive substance. The other 11 steps mention the solution to that problem. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over AA is alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So you replace the alcohol with ever your flavor of addiction, and the rest of it stays the same. Crack, sex, whatever it is that you find yourself to become powerless over. Some people believe that we're just weak, we're weak people, and that why don't we just get over it? Some people feel that we're evil people that have no control, that we're just bad people, genetically predisposed. I would tell you this, we suffer from a spiritual malady. and we're seeking a spiritual solution. I believe that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the template and primary work of recovery, was a gift from God. If you read the Big Book, what you'll notice in time, things will be manifest into them. If you've ever read the Bible or other scripture, how you know that these are divine works of some degree is that their understanding continues to grow as your eyes of your understanding continue to open. There's always more information that you have missed the first time around. They become living works to apply in your daily life. So we're going to go back to your first meeting. Your first meeting of AA can be scary and confusing. You're in pain and distress. Every nerve is ready to beat a hasty retreat. You feel beaten down by life. You're in a place where you would have never, in your wildest dreams, would have ended up. The last house on the block was not the place where people from Skid Row would go. Aren't these the denizens who lurked under the overpasses and cardboard boxes? You might have come to the rooms of AA with a direction from the courts, a nudge from the judge. You might come in to keep an employer at bay, to ensure your continued employment, or well-meaning spouse, your wife or significant other, who has become unmanageable. You hope nobody sees you. You scrunch down in your seat in a vain attempt to go unnoticed. You might have been the town drunk in a city of millions. Now you're afraid someone might recognize you. There's slogans posted all over the wall. Think, think, think. That means think through the first drink. Think about the consequences. Think what's going to happen every time you take that first drink of alcohol. I heard meetings many times, and I believe it. It's not the last drink that gets you drunk. It's the first drink. It's like standing in front of a railroad train. It's the locomotive that's going to get you, not the caboose. Let go and let God. That means we live in acceptance. Keep it simple. We're complicated people. I found most alcoholics are very complicated. You'll only hear another alcoholic say that they're a high intelligence. I believe that for the most part they're a higher intelligence or a higher IQ of most of the average. The way they spring back is just quite amazing. And that we have this committee that goes around the mind and we try to analyze and figure everything out and we have to learn to keep it simple, which is a big chore for a lot. If I've noticed the most brilliant and intelligent a person is, the harder it is for them to tone it down. So we try to keep it simple. This is a simple program for complicated people. First things first. We don't get ahead of ourselves. What's the next right thing? First things first. Keep coming back. See, people come in and they come out. I was with I went to Spring Branch here in Houston, one of the groups. Nice group. Good recovery, good sobriety in there. Good long-term sobriety in there. Solid clubs. Been back. They've been burnt out a couple times. Keep coming back. Just like they ask you to do. The club just kept coming back. I went in there for a speaker meeting Friday night. They have a 8 o'clock speaker meeting. And a friend of mine was there from a local club post to Oak Janice, and I hadn't seen her in a while. I don't hang around that area. Stay closer to home lately. Price of gasoline. And she said, she had just come back from California. She'd been gone for about 4 months. It was, I guess, about 4 or 5 months, 6 months since the last time I'd seen her. Had a nice tan and very attractive woman. And I said, how you doing, Janice? And she said, I'm doing great. I said, how long are you sober now? About 72 days. Janice has got about 20 years in the program. It's called chronic relapse. You know, she gets so far and then she gets back out again. Why? I wish I could tell you. What it is, what we found is intensive work with another alcoholic, the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when others fail. Are you sponsoring girls, Janice? Yes, I am. Well, how's your spiritual life? Well, she says, I'm working on that. The one immunity of our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of the daily spiritual condition. But of course, what maintains itself? If you're not growing spiritually, you're declining spiritually. But I can only speak for myself. She's still coming back. So, you know, eventually, Ebby, who was one of the founders, the originators of AA, he was Bill W.'s sponsor. Bill W., Dr. Bob, were the originators. And Ebby was chronic alcoholic. And even though he was around Bill W. and Dr. Bob, who put all this together initially, could not stay sober for any length of time. And finally, at the end, he was sober for 2 years before he died. And Ebby was chronic. He just was. Just didn't get it until the very end, but he got it. So we know that anybody who's willing to thoroughly follow our path will get it. We pray. And then Janice said she was in California, and when she was in California, she had a sponsor. So she kept to the program while she was in California. And she said, oh, by the way, she says, my sponsor told me to check out Rum Radio. She said they really loved it over there, and they passed it on, and she wanted me to be aware of it. And she says, I know the fellow who started that. And she got choked up about it. And I thought that was really special. I'm so glad that she told me that. That's the benefit that I get from doing the work, knowing that it's out there helping folks. I have no other concern about it. I hope it helps a lot of people. That's my only goal. The 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are promptly displayed on two separate plaques, like the Ten Commandments of some secret occult organization. People are milling around looking to capture their favorite seat, which gives the perspective that is both familiar and unique. We always like to sit in the same place, like church. Ever notice in church, you always go to the same place, the same side of the church, you fill it up in a certain way, and it's the same thing in AA. It's like filling up a church where everybody fills it from the back to the front kind of deal. And then if you take someone's seat, and they usually get in early and they put their keys down to make sure this is their seat. Creatures of habit, things that are familiar, give us a sense of security. Sometimes a little bit too much, but that's the way it is. There's familiar. The room abounds with chatter and clatter. High above the growing din, a call to order as the meeting begins. A welcome to the group and all introductions by the chairperson is quickly followed in a moment of silence to reflect those who still suffer, followed in concert by the serenity prayer. Chairpersons are a little different in every group, how they come to that. In Austin, I found them to be a little bit more formal. In Houston, I find them to be a little bit more formal than in Austin. Austin, some groups, every group is different to some degree. They take their feelings, their protocols from the nearby groups and then incorporate them because that's all they know what to do. In Austin, some of the groups is the first person there, some of the meetings, or whoever wants to sit in the chair chairs the meeting, and then they have little, ice cream sticks with topics on it, or they a perchance opening of the big book, and then they throw out that a reading from the big book or something that's on their mind that day, or they open it up to anybody who may be working a step, is having difficulty with it, or something else that's on someone's mind, and then the discussion takes off from there. That's the chairperson. And the chairperson is opening up the topic, the initial protocol of the meeting, responsible for the passing of the basket. We're self-supporting to our own contribution. And the serenity prayer goes, God, grant me the power to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's also considered, you would consider that an invocation. We invite in the spirit. I wanted to give you the call-in number. It would be nice if somebody would call in and you wanted to discuss this. I do this by myself. I don't have a co-host, a co-anchor on Monday nights, so I just bite the bullet. I have the capacity to talk for extended periods of time, so I have the ability to do that. But it would be nice if somebody would like to call in and join in the fray. If you're afraiding matching wits with me, I don't blame you. The guest call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. Okay, having said that, if this is your first meeting, the thought may occur that this is a religious organization bent on some kind of conversion. Nothing could be further from the truth. Getting brainwashed was not for me. They explained it was more like a dry cleaning, if you please. It has since been made known, when you don't want to do something, any excuse will do. I have long run of options and have nowhere else to place my shoes. Usually it's also called the last house on the block for that reason. The chair asks, is there anyone here for the very first time, anytime, anywhere in a meeting of AA? And would you give us your first name so we could get to know you? To raise your hand or not to raise your hand, that is the question. To get to know me, oh brother. In a moment of courage, a hand rises to the occasion, and a meek, small voice whispers, hi, my name is John or Jane, and the thought flashes most distinct, I wish I could disappear. I really don't want to be here. A combined chorus of warm hellos and welcome, glad you're here, is heard. The meeting is directed right towards you, how everyone got here. Somebody told my story, how did they know that much about me? Most of what is said was with great passion, resolve, and aplomb. Tell you the truth, the most of what I heard was blah, blah, blah. Halfway through, the chair stopped the meeting to pass the basket and explain, according to the seventh tradition, every AA group supporting declining outside contributions. If your first meeting, it's on us. We don't want to be beholden to anybody. We don't have any... So we have no one in charge. We have trusted servants. So no one can commend the government, or any benefactors can't come in and say, well, you need to do this, or you needed to run the show this way. And that's not the way it works for us. In a sense, we're a bunch of anarchists, and we let God take care, run the show. They said there were people from all walks of life. People from Penn State and the state pen, people fresh out of the asylums, judges, doctors, and airline pilots. They told me there was good news and there was bad news. The good news was there was a solution. The bad news was that we were it. There was a lot of laughter. They laughed about their pain and their shame, like it was some kind of inside joke. How could they laugh? My misery would have none of that. I remember one thing they kept repeating, keep coming back. I remember my meeting when I first was serious, and people would laugh, and I was so miserable that it was almost like a personal insult. What could they find so funny, and I'm in so much pain? Your next meeting is the most important meeting, they'll tell you. You need to get a temporary sponsor. You need to start working the steps. You need to hit your knees when the craving comes and ask God to remove it and stay there until it does. They told me this was a disease of mind, body, and spirit, and I could get well, but there were certain things I had to do. What they told me were suggestions, but they have worked for countless others, just like me. They told me if it did not work for me, that they would gladly refund my misery. And in the end, they simply said, if your butt falls off, pick it up and put it in a chair. Get a temporary, and no matter what, keep coming back. Get a temporary sponsor and keep coming back. Sometimes people don't get a sponsor right away. I didn't until I was ready, and then, you know, we kind of, the agreement in the program is you have to find somebody that has what you want. I wanted a Mercedes-Benz. I wanted my money back. I wanted my business back. And I thought maybe perhaps I could learn how to drink like a gentleman. I didn't know what I wanted, basically. So sometimes that's a put off to some people, and they just kind of languish. And the meetings will keep you sober for a very long time. But unless you're working the steps, you're not in recovery. See, there's a difference between just being sober, being clean and sober, and being in recovery. The goal of AA is to attain and maintain long-term sobriety. True. I'm staying sober. Is that not enough? And to some, that's as far as they're going to get. It's like kindergarten. Some folks don't want to get out of kindergarten. They get real comfy in kindergarten. But the real recovery, the real blessings, the real work comes from growth. And you're not going to be comfortable when you're growing spiritually. And some folks just don't like to get out of their comfort zone. Once they've made this horrendous effort to get to AA, that's as uncomfortable as they want to get. I know I was like that, so I'm talking from my own experience. The chair closed with, we are in a CHIP system. It's how we celebrate milestones of sobriety. I used to like to do it. Some places do it differently. What I suggest is the oldest CHIP first. Is anyone celebrating a birthday today? Yay. So person gives their name and how long they're sober. Anyone celebrating a birthday in the month of? October, November, December, please give me your name and the years. Then we go backwards from there. I like a countdown. Is there anyone celebrating 18 months of continuous sobriety? Anyone celebrating 9 months of continuous sobriety? Please come up. And now they come up. I always suggest that they give their name, especially the newcomer. We want to get to know them. They feel connected to the group. Some places don't do that. I don't know why they don't. If I was king, they'd be doing it. I'm not king, so I'm not in charge of anything. And then it'll go down to 6 months. Anyone have 6 months of continuous sobriety? Anyone have 3 months, 90 days? Does anyone have 60 days? Gold chip. Anyone have 30 days of continuous sobriety, nights and weekends? It's the blood red trip. Blood red because they call it 30 days and 1,000 nights. I tell some of my sponsees, if you could stay sober this long today, there's a good chance you can make it to lunch. If it's a morning meeting, you can make it past lunch. You can make it to the evening. If you can make it to evening, there's a good chance you can make it to night. The nights are tough for most folks. They draw out like a knife. But if you can make it through the night sober, every sober morning comes with a promise, another sober day. So it's 30 days and 1,000 nights. 30 days. And then, of course, we have the beginner's chip. This is aluminum disc, and the rumor is it's made from melted pop-top cans, beer cans, and there's a little triangle on it, and one says, "To thy known self be true." And it's an inward commitment of a, no, it's an outward commitment of a inward, I can't remember now. That's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Are there any takers? And that's the big one, whether you get up and get that, and then I like the person to give a moment to say their name. Now, they might say, my name is Joe Blow, and I'm an alcoholic. And if that's the case, they basically have worked step one. They've acknowledged the problem to a group, and they become part of that group. Some will just give their name, and some will not get up at all. But that's okay. That's just the way it is. It gives them opportunity. All we can do is make suggestions. Then we close. The chairperson then said, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What you hear here, who you see here, let it stay here. Everyone circles up holding hands, and the chair said, let the circle represent what we could do together, that which we cannot do ourselves. Whose Father? Then all in unison, we say the Our Father. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. And that is probably your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or something like that. Now, Matt, meetings come in all flavors depending on what neck of the woods you live in. I've been in meetings all over these United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. And they all have a little different twist on it. A little different here, a little different here. Someplace they give the chips in the beginning. New York, they have one person tells like part of their story for 20 minutes, and then people relate to that story. They don't say the Our Father here. So you have all these little nuances of experience. There's a function called the group conscience, and the group conscience is the personality of the group. Collective personality. And most alcoholics like to think that they're special and unique and different, and it reflects in the group conscience. And the group conscience sets out the parameters of the meeting, and they evolve that way. But it's usually taken from other meetings. Okay, so let's get into that. Again, if any brave souls are out there, it's 949-534-0621. Meetings in your neck of wood, in the woods. A meeting of minds is so inclined with memories of habit that drove us insane. A free exchange of facts that transform, reshape, and implications that engage thoughts that there is a better way. AA meetings are crossed between a self-help program, group therapy, and a revival meeting. Meeting formats and procedures are as diverse as there are groups. I've been to meetings all over these United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. Well, I like that. I like I'm getting older, so I repeat myself a lot. In the early 1960s, when wife swapping was in vogue, an AA group formed around the platform of this platform of depravity. A moral indignant railed to Bill W. as a potential black eye to AA and the dark cloud of guilt by association. Bill W. asked, are they staying sober? The emphatic reply was, yes, they are. Bill explained that every group has the right to be wrong. That echoes through the through all the traditions. It only takes two things to start a new AA group, a resentment and a coffee pot. The coffee pot is optional. If someone's in a meeting and he doesn't like the way it's done, or he doesn't like something and they can't seem to get a change through group conscience, he might run off in a huff. He might gather his buds and say, hey, let's go do this our way in a different part of town or next door or whatever you want. If two or three are gathered together with no other affiliation other than AA, they can consider themselves an AA group. How loose is that? It's tightened up a little bit over the years. I'm sorry to say, but it has. There's a fellow, Dick B. great sobriety, 86, 87 years old, lives in Hawaii, he's written 500 books and or 500 articles, I don't know how many dozens books, and his deal is bringing Jesus back into the rooms, Christian fellowship. And I, you know, love Dick. He's got a lot of good stuff to say, and he does have his point. I'm a Christian, but I really feel that AA is a spiritual kindergarten, and that you have to give them milk before you give them meat, and otherwise they will perish. So I like the original format of AA, and let folks come to their agreement of who they believe God to be that works for them. And I believe in time, everyone will eventually come to the same agreement, but not today. So that's my 2 cents. And I'm going to give you some more 2 cents. Meetings from are borrowed. They develop from the surrounding and familiar formats of the nearby groups. The founders of the new group emulate the familiar, the good and the not so good and the unthinking. Change is hard for most in 12-step fellowship. Sometimes it can be an extreme example of maintaining the status quo. Once upon a time, a fistfight broke out when someone changed the position of the chairs. We had paid dearly for our seats, and now we've become glued to a personal point of view. So there is a sense of rigidity with us. I think it's not just us, but I think the alcoholic is an extreme example of emotional addictions. And I think being glued into the familiar is part of it, and getting out of your comfort zone is the other. You know, the familiar gives you a sense of security. So you change things around. I don't feel secure anymore, and I'm a firm believer that you're not going to grow spiritually and be comfortable at the same time. Once they're ingrained, they're almost impossible to change. The collective thinking may be, this is what worked for me. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Who put you in charge? Rules, we got no rules, no stinking rules, but we got a stinking suggestions. In AA, we have more than our fair share of know-it-alls and egomaniacs with low self-esteem. How I know what these things are all about, because in part I'm talking about me. I'm one of the bozos on the bus. So I know exactly how this goes. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I want to keep the things where I'm familiar. So if anybody comes and changes, especially there's a joke in AA that goes around that when a newcomer comes in, say, sober for a while and comes from another group or out of town and has moved in and, you know, this finding his new home group. And it's always suggested to have a home group where you connect up for long-term sobriety, where you have your group, your little family of alcoholics that you can count on, like a neighborhood kind of deal. And but they do it different. When you got sober, whatever they did when you got sober, and that worked for you, it worked. So then when you go to another town and they're doing it a different way, and so now you're really thrown out of your comfort zone. Oh, don't they do it like they do back in Chattanooga or Brentwood, Long Island? And no, they're doing it altogether different. They're doing it wrong. What's wrong with these folks? Don't they know? That's the first. And then, you know, they're going to go, just relax. You'll get used to it. This is the way we do business. So in some cases, it's true. It doesn't really matter, the nuances. Sometimes it does. So even when the change is correct, logical, pertinent, productive, it will be met with that same thought pattern. This is the personality that created this entity, and now you're trying to change things. Relax. Come in and see how you can work inside the meaning. We're anarchists, and we want to change things. We don't believe in the collective. So we have to have group conscience. We have to have groups with there's nobody in charge. That's the only way it really works, and it works well when it works. It's a level playing field where the spirit is affirmed. Experience can be taught. Lest I forget, let's have some fun and get caught up. Open up and let her fly. Open versus closed, locked where anonymity is jealously stocked. Open meetings are just that, come one, come all. Young mothers with babes, toddlers even so. Most of the courtesy, I know enough to simmer down their tone. Even the occasional sociology student or intern from specialty will find their way through the doors of recovery. Family members who would show support are welcome to stay and do their part. So that's an open meeting. Anybody could come to an open meeting. Most of the time, speaker meetings, where one person gets up and tells their story, are speaker meetings. And other, you know, family members are invited to come and no problem, or even a discussion meeting, depends on the club. Now, the closed meeting is a little different. It's a horse of a different color, a colored horse. The requirement is a desire to stop drinking, or if you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome. Otherwise, not. So your family members can't come in unless they're alcoholics. I usually tell people, just don't say anything, you know. But there are reasons why that's done, because sometimes alcoholics want to know they're in with alcoholics and not with anyone else. I think it goes back to the old hierarchy of I'm a real alcoholic, and I have a specific life experience that's unique to me and to us, and we want to keep that focus into a singleness of purpose, I guess. And then there's doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, people, captains of industry, surgeons. You know, an airline pilot's an alcoholic. You don't want to be, you know, you maybe don't want to get it around, or the guy that does the things in the tower, the direct the aircraft. He's an alcoholic. So some of these folks are really lawyers. I don't know why lawyers even care, but there'll be clubs of just attorneys, clubs of just doctors, pilots. You name it, they have clubs like that, and they're closed. They're closed not only to being alcoholic, they're also close to their professional specialty. Although you don't see electricians or, you know, just AA for plumbers, you could if you wanted to, I guess. But, you know, it's a gray area because of the affiliation, so there's an affiliation other than AA. But that's the way it works, and that's, you know, and there's room for two. You know, it's that comfortable, you got to be comfortable. And anonymity is to know that whatever you say in that meeting and you're who you are remains private. You don't want everybody to know. Years ago, it had more of an onus than it does today, but an onus still exists. People, most people today will say, oh, they found the problem. Everybody's got a problem. If you don't, you've been translated probably into Spanish. Everyone has a problem of some kind. So these folks have found their problem, acknowledged their problem, and is working on the problem. How nice. That's I think, the general consciousness today. Some folks still have the deal where he's an alcoholic and he's lesser than his fellows. What's wrong with him? Is he just a weak person? Can he just control his drinking? They just don't get it. And it's okay. They're not supposed to get it. It's not their deal. I would tell you of this one club, and I was a member of. This is the club that I got banned from. They were for giving out recovery cards. They gave out cards like for business, but when it came to recovery, they weren't going there. The one such club has a checkered history. It's called the Posto Club out of Houston. It's a good club. One such club has a checkered history. Oh, see, they're a club. There's a difference between a club and a group. A club is a financial entity. This is the it's a Bill W. Incorporated. It's a corporation who oversees rooms in a building. They rent rooms in a building, and they see to the snack bar, they see to the rent, and then they, through their auspices, have AA meetings inside the facility. It's like a facility organization. They're not really have to follow the traditions unless they've agreed to, and they play the game basically the way they want to play the game. A lot of lawyers in there, a lot of big wheels in there, and that's the reason for that. One such club has a checkered history. A founder was fond of a lady with a similar disease who frequented the same club location. Alas, his wife was an Al-Anon, and to ensure his dalliance would avoid detection, he and his co-founding cronies closed down the club against any and all inspection. The players are all gone to their reward, but the club policy has remained intact. One of three clubs in the USA that remains completely and uniquely closed. Time takes time, and perhaps one day when the old-timers, the guardians of the status quo, go by the way of all flesh, things might change, or will boast how it uniquely remain the same. The only thing is true that there's room for two. And even though the closed meeting, I personally don't think it's always necessary, but I think for some folks, you need it. They don't feel comfortable in open meetings. There's no one in charge, but we do have trusted servants. That's the chair and people otherwise in charge. See, with them, there is folks in charge, which actually goes against our traditions, but that's how they get around it through the corporation. The chairperson brings the room to the order. They name what the club is, the time of the meeting, how often they meet. My suggestion is, my name is Joseph G., and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 10, 1997. This is a no-texting zone. I think we should a suggestion to get into that, because you get a lot of the young kids coming in, they're texting away. I foresee in the distant future that nobody will be speaking. Everybody will be just texting each other as the meeting goes on. And please stay off the pager and stay off the phone. I don't think it's pagers anymore. The phone, just you do it all. Put it on stun if you got to run. Thank you. You know, you can put it on silent. The idea is not to disturb somebody who's talking or disturb the meeting. And then we have the modem of silence, our invocation. That varies depending on the group, but there's usually a moment of silence and the serenity prayer, a third step prayer, something to invoke the spirit, some kind of invocation to set the parameters. And usually the chair, anyone attending their first AA meeting, anyone out of town that would like to be recognized. I have a suggestion. I know my co-host Harold likes it too. If there's a new person that comes in to have a group of people, especially in a newcomers meeting, to go with them to another room if possible, or take them to the side and have a little meeting with the new person. Try to get to figure out what's going on. You know, why is he there? Is it a nudge from the judge? He's got paperwork from the courts because of a DWI or whatever, spousal violence, you know, whatever it was, he's got papers he's got from the courts. We're not connected with the courts in any shape or form. We do this as a courtesy. And the court, the judge will go, okay, what do you want to do? You want to go to AA or you want to go to jail? Okay, I'll go to AA. I know a lady that I dated for a very short period of time. She opted to go to jail for 5 years instead of recovery. And I was taken back. I was amazed. And I says, well, that was very generous of the judge. Why'd you turn him down? She said, I didn't want to get brainwashed. I said, well, it was more like a dry cleaning lady, but the judge made sure that even with good behavior, she was not allowed, she didn't get a minute off her sentence. Because kind of, it made the judge kind of annoyed. Like, he was saying, hey, I'm going to give you a break. I don't want it. I'd rather go to jail. And it was kind of like a slap in the face. But she really didn't get it. She really didn't. And I guess once you make those decisions, you kind of got to live with it. So we didn't. I think we made two dates on the deal. Which after she told me that, it was a little harder too. And she was a good looking woman too. You could find out if his wife is kicking him out, or does he feel he has a problem with alcohol, or is he just passing through? And, you know, he's on the way to the prom and decided to go to an AA meeting. Why is he here? You can make a suggestion for him to get a temporary sponsor, All sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for a day or temporary for a lifetime. But the key is to get started. You can always work out the particulars down the road. I believe that sponsors should go get sponsees. I don't think that they could find you. That's fine. If they're that desperate, that's even better. But you should go get them because they really don't know. Newcomer really hasn't got a clue what's supposed to do. He doesn't know the jargon. He doesn't know the rituals. He doesn't know what to expect. And so a little group like this could get him in. And, you know, if he's not interested, he just wants to go to meetings for the time being, keep coming back. What else can you tell them at that point? But this is a good way to get them started. Usually a beginner's meeting would be a group. You get a little group in there that would be willing to do that, and they just know to do that and say, hey, can you come with us? We want to talk to you. we're taking you to the back room. And then any visitors would like to be recognized. I like to know who the visitors in the room because, personally, I want to hear from them. Some clubs are really closed like that. There'll be newcomers in the room and people from other parts of the country, and they like to hear from the same people who are in the rooms for the last 20 years. I don't get it, but that's AA. I want to hear how they do it. I want to hear how they do it in Paris. I will be passing newcomer packet. I think a newcomer packet is real important, men for men, women for women. It has like maybe a copy of the big book. Some clubs do that, the 12 and 12. They have pamphlets to recognize questions about alcoholism, what a sponsor does and doesn't do, and it has names on it. The names and phone numbers, people have agreed to take your phone call. You can usually find your sponsor in there. On Rum Radio, we have a interview for a sponsor. The reason I put that in there, because this is what the format usually suggests today. Personally, I think you should go get your sponsee. Go get them. When they come to the door, they get that beginner's chip, they're hot. I'm surprised guys don't fight over them. They just hand them the numbers, you know, like, okay, I'm just passing through. Like somehow the new guy is supposed to know by sense of smell who's going to be a good sponsor or not. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's it. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, self-supporting through our own contribution. That's the seventh tradition. We're not aligned with any sex, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. That's our main purpose. Actually, that's our only purpose, to stay sober and help alcoholics to achieve sobriety. We ask everyone to respect the privacy and anonymity of each person here. The opinions expressed in the meeting are those of each speaker and not necessarily those of AA as a whole. As we're winding down here, I think we were in the last, 12 minutes. Okay, I'll give you one more call and one more chance. Guest call in 949-534-0621. Then we read the how it works. I love to do that. I'm really good at reading how it works and why is because I enunciate particular words in the dinner. If we had more time, I probably would have thrown it out for you, but we'll have to save that for another time. I think it's good not to mumble through this thing, to enunciate the key phrases and words in this thing and punch it out. And people, they're not used to that. In St. Paul, Minnesota, will those who have worked the 12 steps and are available to sponsor, please raise your hand. Please take a moment and look around at these people who are willing to give of their experience, strength, and hope so you can attain and then maintain sobriety in AA. Thank you. They do that in the beginning of the meeting, which I think is a great idea. That, and I suggest also to give them the opportunity to speak first, so this way you can at least listen before you would look for a meeting. Now, Once that's all said and we're ready to sit down and get to the meeting, get a little bit more into what a sponsor does, what a sponsor doesn't do, and why you need a sponsor. I think that's always good information. The chair puts out the topic. Topic could be wide and varied. A perchance opening of the big book is always a good, or some literature that we found to be pertinent. Somebody might be struggling with a step, so we open that up to anybody who has a suggestion as to a topic that they need to talk to, and then they go. The chairperson has 5 minutes, and this is one of my pet peeves. When you chair, you have 5 minutes to get it out. You can do 5, 6, 7 minutes. People accuse me of going a little longer, just that what I have to say is just jam-packed with information, so it just seems longer. But 5 minutes should be more than sufficient to get out the topic and give your spin on it, and then open up the meeting. You can have, now there's different meetings. There's round robin, where you go around the room. Men pick on women. Women pick on men. Any kind of combination. You pick on somebody you don't know. You just pick on somebody, and it takes off war. I like the volunteer meeting, because there's long bouts of silence while people are collecting thoughts. People don't like to be silent in a room of a lot of people. Eventually, somebody will pop like popcorn. Pop, pop, pop. Because it's the silence becomes deafening, and so I believe sometimes there's as much sobriety in the silence as there is in the noise. But that's me. Some people can't, so the chair can't. Once the chair has spoken and given out his deal, that's just about out of the. That's for the, it for the chair. I mean, one of the things they do in Houston, which is like, oh brother, to me, is that every time someone talks, the chair has something to say. They're going to expand on the experience of their own experience, what the person was saying, validate what the person just said, expand on what the person just said. And I believe once you share in a meeting of AA or any 12-step program, that should be the end of it right there. There should be no other discussion. Otherwise, it's considered crosstalk. Crosstalk is basically, I read somewhere, it's only if it's negative. If you say something positive, it's really not crosstalk. If you say something negative, it's crosstalk, but it's crosstalk just the same. And so I'll tell a chairperson that, and they get really upset because it's the way they do business here. And I said, if nothing else, we're dealing with a finite amount of time. There's only an hour to the meeting. Or an hour and a half. Some places have an hour and a half meetings, and they break for 20 minutes for a smoke or whatever they do. But most places are an hour. So every time you speak after your 5 minutes, you're taking someone else's time. Even if it's silence, you're taking up time. You had your time. You validated yourself with your discussion. Now you're sitting on the bar stool again and telling us how the world turns. How annoying. Don't you get it? And, of course, they'll argue with you until the gates of hell to tell you, no, they got so. That's the way they do it here. There's men's meetings. Men's meetings are usually really good because nobody's auditioning in a men's meeting. In a co-ed meeting, you have auditioning going on. You know, of course, that's the way men are with women and women with men. You know, be articulate and funny and et cetera, trolling a little bit, being articulate. But in a men's meeting and a woman's meeting, it really gets down to the nuts and bolts of sobriety. I know people with 20 years of sobriety, they won't go to a men's meeting. Why not? I'm not comfortable just with a men's meeting. Well, that tells you about where they are in their sobriety. Speaker meetings, big book studies. That's my favorite. I like big book studies and 12 and 12 studies because it gets down to the basic fundamental of the program. Speaker meetings are usually about an hour. Someone comes up and tell their story. As a matter of fact, I suggested to someone that I'm due to tell my story at the Spring Branch Club. And, of course, my story I'm going to try to cut down on the amount of, they call it the drunkalogue, which sometimes are hilarious. I mean, just, you know, side-splitting funny stuff, the way it's presented by some of the guys. They're circuit speakers. and they're really well-toned in their craft. They have great stories, and they've been polished over the years, and they're very comfortable speaking to large groups of people, and they have tremendous amount of insight and knowledge, which is great. And I'm good with that because that's their story, but I really want to hear more about the solution. And that's one of my little pet peeves. Let's see, you know, take 10, 15 minutes, even 20 if you have to, on the problem, because we all know what the problem looked like. You know, we were powerless over alcohol and our lives would become unmanageable. That's step one. The other 11 steps, what we call is a design for living. Instead of concentrating on step one, let's concentrate on the other 11/12 of the program and stay in the solution. We live in the solution, not in the problem. Speaker meetings sometimes are for people who are not sure if they're alcoholic or not. So when they hear the speaker talking about their sundry escapades and they can relate to these particular escapades, they say, wow, I did that stuff too. Since they haven't worked the program, they have no idea what the solution looks like. I still think it's important to reinforce the solution at any time. You know, you got that story. You got your little story. Hone it down, close it down, and then move on to the solution. That's my deal. My deal is sponsorship. I believe that a good sponsor really makes a big difference. Initially, what do we got? 3 minutes. Initially, we had sponsorship, and that's how this thing started. Ebby going to Bill W., Bill W. going to Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob and Bill going to Bill D. in Towns Hospital, one guy talking to another guy. There's only one way we find it to be the most effective, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. It just is. You can go to the therapist, and you can go to psychiatrists and psychologists, and you can go to other forms. But my experience is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic cuts away all the BS. It gets really down to where the rubber meets the road. It really does. And this is where there's no shame and there's no blame. We have an intimacy that few people ever get. We have the intimacy of strangers sometimes. Scott Peck said, intimacy was the ability to share one's reality without fear of judgment or change. And that's what we do. We have no fear because we come from a common experience. And sometimes that common experience gets a little bit to be too much, and people polish that thing up until it glints in the sun. And of course, the story gets better over the years. What is sponsorship? When Bill W., only a few months sober, was stricken with powerful urge to drink, he thought, came to him, you need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. When we first began to attend AA meetings, we may feel confused and sick and apprehensive. Although people at meetings respond to our questions willingly, that alone isn't enough. Many other questions occur to us between meetings. We may find we need constant close support as we begin learning how to live sober. So we select an AA member with whom we can feel comfortable, someone with whom we can talk freely and confidentially, and we ask that person to be our sponsor. Whether you are a newcomer who's hesitant about bothering anyone or a member who's been around for some time trying to go it alone, sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Alcoholics recovering in AA want to share what they have learned with other alcoholics. We know from experience that our own sobriety is greatly strengthened when we give it away. And so that's why we put together Rum Radio. I go up to the newcomer, have you had enough? Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? And you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have. And the first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions. I have it on the website. It's under the sponsee, how to find the sponsee tab. And if I get those 7 questions, and I need those questions answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Most of the folks, if not all, not at all, attain and maintain sobriety in AA because I get them going right away. But anyway, so that's the way I like to work my program, being of maximum service to God and our fellows. As we grow spiritually, we grow in effectiveness. And so I like to think that as we grow spiritually, we can help that much more. And that's what we do, and that's how we stay sober, and that's how we act for God, and that's where God comes into this thing. So, thank you for listening. For those who have been there, and see you on the radio, rumradio.org.